This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Joined today by Dell Moore. Dell is Executive Director of Public Policy with the American Farm Bureau Federation. Dell, great to see you.
Great to see you too, Tony, and thank you for stopping in. We very much appreciate what you do on behalf of farmers and ranchers and helping get the word out about all of the fun stuff that's going on here in Washington, D.C.
Little background for those who don't know your background. Where'd you grow up and how'd you end up in D.C.?
Well, I grew up in southwest Kansas, west of Dodge City, 40 miles, a little town called Copeland, and had nine kids in my high school graduating class. Went to school at Fort Hays State University, have a degree in animal science, and my life plan was to be a cowboy on somebody's ranch, and then fell in love with a Maryland girl who decided we needed to move back east, and so I had the great good fortune when I got back here to go to work for then Kansas big first district congressman Pat Roberts, and Pat kind of raised me in town, and I learned a whole different way to shovel the BS around. It works a lot easier, and I cleaned up a lot quicker at the end of the day.
Now, you mentioned that, but there are a couple of other stops as well along the way. It's given you an opportunity to see what happens on Capitol Hill. Obviously, you're with Farm Bureau, but a couple of other stops along the way that help guide you as well.
Well, and I had the privilege when Senator Roberts was elected to the Senate, I moved over to the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and worked legislative issues for them for a few years. And then when George Bush was elected president, Secretary Ann Veneman asked me to come over and be her chief of staff at USDA. And I had the privilege serving all four individuals that the president appointed as Secretary of Agriculture during that time. So I've been on kind of all different sides of the table, and now I'm back to doing that stuff that used to irritate me when I was at USDA and up on the Hill.
So here we are with a Secretary of Agriculture, but that's all we have at this point. It's hard to find others that are at USDA, and I'm talking about the appointees at this point. Is that concerning, and is it completely out of the ordinary?
Well, given the time frame, I got to say it's not completely out of the ordinary, because I think back 16 years ago, Secretary Veneman was sworn in January 21st, first day of President Bush's tenure. And from that time, we just hit the ground running to get spots filled. Well, when you look at Secretary Sonny Perdue, who was not nominated until right before Inauguration Day, and then ended up in the confirmation process that didn't wrap up until April 24th. So he got about a three and a half month delay in getting started in the process. So that's what I know he and his team are working on now. He's got great chief of staff. He's got a number of special assistants to the secretary that are top shelf individuals, keeping an eye on things, and a small transition team. But when you're looking at about somewhere between 220 and 250 political appointees at USDA, not only in the headquarters office, but in each of the 50 states, with a Farm Service Agency director, a rural development director, there's a lot of appointing that's going on. So on top of all of the issues that USDA has jurisdiction over and the secretary is working on, he's also got a lot of work going on just to get his team put together. And so I can't say that we are concerned. We're just a little anxious for him to be able to get his team appointed, including those that have to go through Senate confirmation, so that we can really lay our issues on the table and take full advantage of being able to share what our farmers and ranchers have on their priority list.
So much like this process, and I'll use process a couple of times here, but this process of getting those appointed and confirmed and into place, there are other processes that go on here in D.C. that would probably frustrate many of us when we come up here. Why can't we just get things done quickly?
Well, I'm smiling because this is one of the things my mentors over the years have taught me, and it's very important for those that haven't done so in a while. It's important to read the Constitution. To read the plan that our founding fathers had for a process when they decided to tell King George to go pound sand, or in probably some more polite version of that. But effectively, you know, they wanted to make sure when they put our form of government together that there wasn't any one individual that could take over the process to be king or queen, if you will. And so what we have is, you know, a Congress, and we have the executive branch with the White House and the president being the head of that. And then we have the Supreme Court process. And it's like a big game of rock, paper, scissors, which I know my own brother gets frustrated when I talk about this being a game. And it is a game of sorts, but one that has a lot of different consequences if one doesn't play it right. So, you know, you start off, I want to get good legislation passed or stop bad legislation. That requires making sure that you've got at least 218 House members on your side. It means that before you can get anything done in the Senate, you've got to get at least 60 senators to agree that we're going to go to 51 votes to decide something. And then they've got to reconcile their differences. And that's kind of the easy part, because then you got to make sure the president's going to sign whatever law they pass. Once that law is enacted with the president's signature, then it goes to whatever agency is going to implement that. So the process starts over again in that you have to keep a very close watch and you have to be very engaged in working with that particular agency to make sure that the regulations fit the intent of what Congress passed to meet the challenges that our farmers and ranchers and rural communities, from my perspective, are facing out there. And a good example of, you know, where Congress passed a law and we've been living with it up to a point is Waters of the U.S. You know, the previous administration issued a rule that effectively would have made EPA the largest land use planning agency in the country. Forget the water part of it. And so we started working 3 years ago to try and get that rule stopped. We finally had to go to another branch of the government, the courts, and have a judicial process, not just Farm Bureau alone and not just agriculture alone, but a lot of different industries. A lot of different state governments, state attorneys general. In fact, our current EPA administrator, Scott Pruitt, was one of the first state attorneys general that filed suit against EPA over Waters of the U.S. Now he's at EPA and he's working on withdrawing that rule, but that's just the first step of the process, because we know others are going to sue him or sue EPA for withdrawing the rule. So we've got to fight that particular fight, and then we're going to start all over. What does this next Waters of the U.S. rule look like in order to meet the demand from the Supreme Court that there's some gaps in the way the previous EPA had been administering this law? That's an ongoing process. It's something that, you know, folks like, well, we've been working on it 3 years, so we've got to be about done. This fight over who controls, you know, the navigable waters of the U.S. has been going on for decades. The Supreme Court has told EPA twice, not just on ag issues, but with municipalities and others, that they've taken the steps too far. But I got to tell you, EPA is a persistent agency, and they brought those issues back. They keep bringing them back. We fought rural fugitive dust now through three different cycles. Each one of those fights, and it's not just on EPA. We've got same things going on with labor. We've got issues at Interior, with, you know, Federal Lands, Endangered Species Act. We've got issues going on at USDA with certain rules. And we're all the time wrestling with the Internal Revenue Service and their approach on some of these tax issues. And, you know, it's one of all the issues when I tell folks, if you want to pick an issue that's easy to lobby, that you don't have to be that deep an expert on, at least for the first 30 seconds, pick taxes. Every issue starts off, Congressman, Senator, taxes are too high. If you can't get rid of them, at least make them lower. You know, so you kind of work out from those areas. And the one thing that we do on behalf of the farmers and ranchers, rural communities that we represent, is we've got the folks that can dig all the way down to the roots of those issues and get into the technical details so that we can hopefully effect a change, whether it's stopping bad legislation or a bad regulation or helping push a good one forward.
Moving forward, you mentioned the work that Farm Bureau does on behalf of its members. Is the website a good place to go for those who may be members or maybe they're not members, just to find out what Farm Bureau is doing?
Absolutely. We have almost a brand new website up now. It's called fb.org, the Voice of Agriculture. You can go to that website, click on our issues page, and you've got our top objectives that our board of directors identified for this year. And that's one of the things that makes, we believe, makes Farm Bureau so powerful. You know, our board of directors made up of State Farm Bureau presidents. And those State Farm Bureau presidents will tell you that their power emanates from all the county farm bureaus that work together to send policy up to us. Everything that I work on is started out as a grassroots policy discussion that made its way up to the national level. So when we're working on these issues, we had the confidence of knowing that this isn't something that Dale Moore dreamed up in Washington, D.C. This is something that somebody with their boots in the dirt that's, you know, living on a farm, living on a ranch, living in a rural community has got an issue that we need to work on to try and make things, you know, a little easier, a little better, life a little less, you know, stressful for them on their end to basically, you know, if you'll forgive me for saying it this way, it's, you know, Senator Roberts told, I heard him tell a group one time, you know, be thankful you're not getting all the government you're paying for. And in effect, that's kind of what we're doing. It's like we need the federal government, you know, to be, you know, have regulations where we need them. Food safety comes to mind, even some of the environmental regulations. But we also need those regulations to take into account that the men and women I serve have got to make a living. Those regulatory burdens, you know, one by itself, maybe I can live with that. But you start stacking them up, and, you know, and it's that. You get to that point where that proverbial camel that just can't carry one more straw.
Dale, it's great to see you. Thanks for your time, and we wish you the best.
Thank you, Tony, and very much appreciate what you do for all of us in agriculture. And anytime you're in Washington, you know where home is. Come by and see us.
Dale Moore is Executive Director of Public Policy with the American Farm Bureau Federation. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.